In the labyrinth, Hester and another agent in a whisper suit found the daughter of the robbers wandering the passages. She was alone and scared. Tears ran down her face.
Hey, it's okay. We're the good guys.
The little girl calmed down slightly.
Where's your mum and dad?
The girl looked up at the agent.
You went melty.
Christ.
Hester turned toward the agent.
We scour every inch of this thing before we torch it. I will allow for no more casualties, you understand me?
Yes, Director Hester.
Hester turned to walk into the dark. The agent picked up the little girl.
Take her back to the entrance.
Where are you going?
Hester's goggles glowed as she stepped forward into the darkness.
Into the dark.
She made her way deeper into the labyrinth. Her night vision goggles in the whisper suit made it relatively easy for her to see. The night vision gave the passages a blue tint, but she could see everything. She turned down one passageway, and then another.
Probably my last day on the job. Better make it worthwhile, at least.
No!
Sam saw the glow in the distance and assumed danger. She turned and ran, vanishing down a passage.
Hey, I see you!
Hester ran after her, the whisper suit assisting her. She turned the corner and could see Sam's retreating back in the distance. Down the corridor, a mist wafted up from the labyrinth floor, the type of mist that heralded a traveler between worlds. Sam sprinted into the mist.
Wait up, goddammit!
As Hester ran, the mist grew heavier.
Oh, what is this?
The mist became even heavier now, completely obscuring even the night vision view. Hester slowed.
What is this goddamn thing doing now?
A huge dark shadow suddenly appeared in the mist. It lumbered forward towards Hester. It was 20 feet tall. The Getty Sentinel had finished absorbing each other and now fully moved out of the mists and stopped facing Hester. One of its long arms reached forward to Hester.
Hester.
A giant hand wrapped around Hester and scooped her up off the ground. Hester immediately recognized the voice.
Getty?
The creature held her up towards Getty's face. Its tendrilless branches and twigs entwined and penetrated the military-grade Kevlar weave of the whisper suit.
Director Hester, we have had it all wrong.
Instantly, small red flowers sprouted from chinks in the whisper suit.
These attacks, invasions, deaths, growing pains. We must embrace the new beyond this and abandon the old dead separate.
Hester's eyes were wide in fear as she peered through the goggles at Getty's new body.
Man, plant, machine, myth, language, we must learn to read. We, I, he, she can teach you now. Let us teach you how the world is, was, can be.
Unknown to Hester or the Getty Sentinel, Sam had made it to the other side of the mist. She stumbled forward. Her face was tear-streaked, her hair a mess. She clutched a machine gun.
Sam lost the robots somewhere back there. She feels like Orpheus, too afraid to look back.
Sam wiped her forearm across her face as she neared a corner, clearing it of sweat and tears.
The gun she pulled from the hands of a half-melted corpse in a SWAT helmet. At least she thought he was a corpse before his eye flickered in her direction, sensing her touch. Then glazed over again.
Sam's eyes were wide, staring, seemingly unseeing.
It makes her feel safer, even as her senses seem to be dimming. She wonders if the acid is working on her brain, inhaled as vapors. Or if it's just panic clouding her mind as she heads deeper into the dark.
Sam held the gun defensively as she stopped and peered around the corner.
She heard something behind her, a muffled rumble that could be voices. But she knows now that everything here is designed to entice her. The gun in her hands makes her feel safer. She will never trust the light again.
Hester tried to make sense of what Getty, in her new form, had told her.
Getty, help me understand.
She, I have become a...
Bullets began to spray through the body and face of the Geti sentinel. The automatic fire continued its assault on the monster. Branches and tendrils snapped and fell to the floor of the labyrinth. The creature dropped Hester. She landed hard on the floor of the labyrinth. She quickly scrambled to her feet as the giant body of the Geti sentinel crashed next to her. Its tendrils spilled across the floor. Unseen spores floated up from the floor and drifted around the passage. Hester looked up from the body and saw Sam standing on the other side of the creature. She held an assault rifle and was clearly crying. Hester pulled off her helmet, her eyes wide with horror. She let it drop to the ground next to her.
What have you done?
Hester knelt next to the creature and gently lifted what was left of Geti's face. There was no movement. She gently let go of the face. She turned to Sam, a mad panic in her eyes.
What have you done?
Kay, the good folk, and Dermot the Walker continued their trudge through the Otherworld. The rain was heavier now, but they pushed on as the small good folk continued his story.
We were going home.
It was the Otherworld, but in much happier times. Everything had a summer haze to it, and large groups of good folk were heading home. Some walked, some flew, but all were happy to make their way home.
We, the wayward sons and daughters of man, had been brought here to serve us conduits between two worlds.
A lost toddler walked through the forest. She wore early 20th century woolen clothing. The good folk, well hidden by the trees, watched her. She kept walking and wasn't as afraid as she probably should have been.
We would be taken when we wandered errant into places that were green, where the walls were thin.
In a small bedroom, in a medieval cottage with shuttered windows, a three-month-old baby lay swaddled in the crib. The hands of a good folk gripped the windowsill from the outside.
Or else we would be stolen from cribs by our fellows, who would only have us be as happy as them.
The same medieval child slept in the other world, curled at the roots of a tree. A branch wormed into his back to create a wing. Moss quickly grew over his face. He never woke through any of it. He seemed relaxed and peaceful.
We allowed the forests to recreate us in their image. And we were happy. We were warm, and we could dance and be fed by sunlight.
The medieval child, now a good folk, awoke. His eyes snapped open. The other world had changed him. His eyes now large and yellow with a red iris. He looked around cautiously.
And in return, this world could watch the one we came from via our eyes.
In the other world, Kay, the good folk, and the walker came to a gigantic burrow in a hillside. Thick roots erupted from every side of its walls, barrier-like. Kay rummaged inside her jacket. She produced a flashlight. She pointed it at the tunnel.
Is this it? It can't be much further now.
It's not. This is Pan's doorstep. Now, we need only go down.
The light of the flashlight refracted through the roots as they began picking their way through them.
Down, where the roots are deep.
The trio worked their way deeper into the tunnel. The good folk, over time, began to look gradually better and continued its story.
But then, the sickness came. The human world began to bind and savage its own nature. And ours with it.
The good folk huddled together on the bank of a lake in the other world. They watched fearfully as an oil spill rippled across the lake. Some of them tried to touch it, to push the oil away. Most stared in disbelief. all of them knew that it was trouble.
Our laughter stopped. We found ourselves too weak to recruit more for our ranks.
They came out of the root-walled passage and found themselves in a huge chamber. In front of them, steps led further down. They stopped at the top of the stairs. The steps were uneven and gnarled, made entirely out of branches. A luminous fungus lining the walls made it easier to see, but cast everything in an eerie green light. The good folk, now healed even more, continued with its story.
But even then we trusted you, our kin, to see the error of your ways. For as much as you were scorching our earth, you are doing so twofold to your own.
How deep can this go? The books I read didn't prepare me for this.
They started slowly down the steps. Kay turned towards the good folk on her back, an eyebrow raised.
But no. Even as you reached point after point of no return, you did not seem to care for your own destruction.
Some of us cared.
But mostly, you were angry.
The good folk spoke again. A large group of good folk clustered around one of their number, who stood on a rock and had just finished rallying the troops. He pointed into the forest. The army of good folk all moved towards the forest.
And so were we, at last. When we realized a sickness of yours had penetrated our world far deeper than we ever could have feared. That this sickness from your world could manifest here, much as this world could manifest on yours.
They swarmed through the forest, heading for the mists, the doorways to Earth.
At last, we were spurred to return through the mists to your world, to plead, implore, or, if we had to, threaten.
One of the good folk looked down at his hand as it was quickly overcome by a grey rot. It couldn't make a sound before his hand rotted away entirely.
But we were plant matter now, and the pestilence had gotten in at the root.
All around, the good folk collapsed in the forest. They curled in on themselves like dying insects, all infected by the same grey rot.
We'd left it too late.
Kay, Dermot the Walker, and the good folk slowly entered the gargantuan chamber. In front of them, on a throne, sat the giant figure of Pan. Pan didn't move, didn't acknowledge their presence. He was not spared from the same grey rot that had infected all the creatures of the other world. His eyes had long since rotted away, and large chunks of the creature were gone, as though they had fallen off of him, like bark from a dying tree.
The great god Pan is dead!
Kay recoiled as she looked up at the creature and silently wondered if the whole journey had been for nothing. The good folk unhitched itself from her back and climbed down.
No. This can't be right. I never read this. It wasn't in the book.
We reached out to you, it's true. In the stagnant places where we could whisper to you, even as we lay in frozen debt on forest floors. You, who'd entered our celestial space.
The good folk limped towards Pan. The walker and Kay looked baffled.
Miss Kay, what's he talking about?
I sort of gassed myself with the fungal hallucinogen. It was a whole thing.
The good folk gestured grandly up at Pan.
But who do you think had written the books you were reading?
Kay's mind flashed back to her dreaming in the library, reading books written in the language of oaks. She hadn't noticed it at the time, but each book she touched slowly became infected with the grey rot.
We did not know you'd take it for omniscience. We thought you'd understand that all points of view require omission. And that by the very act of reading it with your eyes, you'd infect it with the rot of human perspective.
In Pan's chamber, the good folk looked back at Kay over its shoulder as it stepped towards Pan.
Perhaps we'd become too much like Plant. Forgotten a certain form of human hubris.
Why then? Why bring me here?
With great effort, the good folk stretched his wings. They beat for a few seconds and stopped. Then, through gritted teeth, the good folk leapt into the air and hovered there, his wings fluttering behind him. With a bit more effort, his wings beat faster and he rose. Kay could see he was laboring for every inch of height as he moved further up to land on Pan's shoulder. Kay and the walker both looked up at him.
Is that not obvious now?
He pushed his hand into the rotted head of Pan, and it crumbled away, all of it dead wood. Large pieces of Pan fell to the ground in front of Kay. She watched the wood splinters tumble down the giant's torso. As Kay looked up, she could see, now that Pan's head was gone, his antlers had both reached up into the ceiling of the chamber and down through his head. She could see that there was a wooden nervous system at his core that was somehow still alive.
You needed a replacement. This world's been lashing out because nothing's guiding it.
The good folk lifted and hovered off the shoulder of Pan.
You wanted to save your world. You wanted to save ours. And this led you to a crack between both.
The walker turned to Kay, nervous. He gripped her shoulder tightly.
Yes, I did. Okay?
Miss Kay, this doesn't seem right. How can one person guide an entire world?
Kay looked at him impassively.
You did say I was the fucking devil once.
Then she turned and looked back up at Pan.
Guess this is kind of the next best thing.
The good folk flew down to land on Pan's arm. Kay approached Pan's nearest hoof and began to pull away the dead wood. The good folk looked down from his new vantage point on Pan's hand.
Be warned! You will change.
Kay didn't look up at him as she continued to pull parts of Pan away.
I've been changing the whole time I've been here, and long before. It's going to take a long, long time to move the debris. The deadwood of the old Pan, killed by man in his age of reason. As I dig my fingers into rotted bark, another, in another world, around the corner, digs into deadwood too.
In the Hyde Park Labyrinth, Agent Hester and Sam stood in the same place. Hester knelt over the body of the Getty Sentinel, her hands on it.
What have you done? Did you not hear them? They'd come back to fix all this mess, to tell us how to save ourselves.
Sam dropped the gun. She was still twisted with panic.
Everything here lies. This place, it's a fly trap.
Hester vainly put her hands on Getty's dead face.
Getty? Getty!
A low electronic voice emanated from Hester's discarded helmet.
Hester. You there? If you hear me, the situation, this is larger.
Outside the park, the labyrinth grew. Exotic trees began to grow at astronomical rates, uprooting sidewalks. Buildings cracked and tumbled, and other exotic trees erupted in nearby neighborhoods.
It's spreading. Repeat, it's...
Hester looked at the thing that was kind of Getty's body.
This is it, isn't it? We're fucking doomed now. Stupid fucking human race with our stupid tech and guns and shit.
Hester had failed to notice the spread of zombie fungus across the Getty Sentinel onto her whisper suit's gauntlet.
The fuck has it done for us? Obsessed with conquering. Never had the patience to listen to our own planet. To let it lead us.
She suddenly noticed the fungus on her gauntlet. She stared down at her glove. Sam walked up to her tentatively.
Shit!
Sam saw the fungus as panic filled her face. Hester stared at her arm with mild interest.
That stuff on you! It's spreading!
Yes. Ophiocordyceps unilateralis. And I think I get bonus points for memorizing that.
Hester flexed her hand and watched the fungus spread.
Quite a nasty little bugger. Mind control fungus.
Get your glove off! There's still time, just don't let it touch your skin!
Hester dropped her arm to her side.
It's already in my arm. I can feel its roots. I think I deserve this. Maybe we all do.
In the throne room of Pan, Pan was now gone from the throne, having left only two thick strands of roots which hung down from the ceiling. The roots were once his horns. They split and thinned out as they headed downwards. Kay stood on the empty throne. She threw the last pieces of woody debris off of it. She watched the debris land on the floor of the chamber and looked at her hands.
There. The splinters in my splinters have splinters.
She sat down on the throne, dwarfed by the giant chair.
I still don't get how this works exactly. Pan was the world tree. How do I become that?
The good folk flew to her, reached up, and grabbed the thin ends of the roots hanging above her head.
We think that the damage done to this world by yours is irreparable. The only way we might survive is by synthesis.
Dermot the Walker watched the conversation from the ground.
By taking Pan's throne, you bleed two worlds together.
Wait, is that not what we sought to stop? What of the cobbled streets of London and the thatched roofs of the towns? Will we lose all that?
The good folk twisted one of the root's ends into the non-antlered side of Kay's scalp. The other entwined itself with her own antler.
That stuff's long gone. And who knows? Perhaps what's next will be better than what came before. If we fear change...
Her face scrunched in pain as the roots took hold.
Then, we're already dead.
The roots probed further and burrowed into Kay's brain and body.
And the thoughts of an entire world flood my mind. And it's more than I can handle. Like trying to grab hold of a live wire that's been thrashing wildly in a pool of water.
As Kay screamed, her face hardened, chipped and splintered like wood. Soon her skull was visible, free of skin, the rooted horns still attached. Kay, as a human, was no more. She was growing into something else. A glass rose began to grow from one of her empty eye sockets.
I can see every aspect of both worlds, and I can feel them.
The rose continued to grow.
And the good folk are right. They've become unstable. I tried to push them together, but it's too much.
The rose exploded, sending out shards of shrapnel glass.
It's too much.
Oxford Street in London. Great oak and fir trees had sprung up between the coffee shops and retail stores. In the distance, the center point tower block. The concrete cracked and warped in places by roots and vegetation.
And the great forest and the city exist in the same time at once.
Kay's eyes changed, becoming like the yellow and red goat slit of Pan's eyes.
And panic reigns. But as I try and pull back to ease the transition, I move at the speed of oak trees. Years pass in moments. Riots and looting in the streets turns to foraging for survival.
Oxford Street was now completely wrecked. Raggedly dressed people clambered out of shattered windows and along the streets. Oxford Street was now empty. The city aged further and more vegetation has taken over the buildings.
And the people get fewer and fewer. And then they are gone from the city, seeking higher ground.
Oxford Street, years later. The houses and buildings still stand. The streets are filled with water now.
First, without maintenance, the underground system floods. The gutters and drains overflow with litter. New rivers. New avenues for moss and mulch.
Oxford Street still. Small seedlings have sprouted from the shop fronts. The water level has grown higher.
Then the seeds and the spores find new cracks in the asphalt and the concrete. And they grow.
It was once Oxford Street. Now, a river runs down it. Plants and fungi bloomed on the remains of houses. Trees flowered. Tendrils of new growth have sprung out of the river.
They push in the slow ways that plants do. And with time, the flowers tear down skyscrapers.
The center point building finally succumbed to the plant life and collapsed. It's dawn in London, but London is changed. The world is changed. It is desolate. A marsh filled with rubble of concrete and wood. The streets completely overtaken with growth. Big Ben lay in ruins, half submerged in what was the Thames River.
At last, I am adjusted. But the world now, the world that is, it is far too still. Were I still capable, I would weep. This was our failing. Mine and each of ours. To think that we held the answers. To think that any of our senses were attuned to have given us a clear understanding of all that was going on. That we could control it.
It's dawn in what was known as Hyde Park long ago. The skies have moved from pre-dawn grey to pink, heralding the approach of the sun. The labyrinth that covers the park suddenly and quickly receded and rotted away.
But perhaps, yes, somewhere there's a hope.
As the labyrinth moved away, beneath a large tree, a human form was curled up at the base. The body was covered in moss, mulch, and fungus.
Here.
The plant life moved away to reveal Agent Abigail Hester, still in the whisper suit, helmet still on.
Wake up, Director Hester.
Hester stirred. She slowly pushed herself up, snapping roots of vines and sending mulch tumbling from her form. She started and looked down at her hands. The zombie fungus sprouted from every chink in the suit, including from a crack in the eyeglass.
What is...
She began tugging at the helmet in a panic. On the tree just above her, a small sprouting piece of fungi suddenly grew. It snaked its way down the tree to Hester. As it moved, the vine grew larger, the end of it becoming bulbous. It slowly formed a face and head. The fungi formed the face of what was Dr. Getty. It studied Hester for a moment as she unsuccessfully tried to remove her helmet.
Wouldn't do that if I were you.
Hester jumped at the voice. She turned quickly towards the growth.
What? Getty? You're dead. I was dead.
She squeezed her temples through the helmet, trying to process everything.
What happened?
Not dead. Dormant. And you let us in, remember?
The plant likeness of Getty was reflected in the eyeglass of the whisper suit.
We're in the suit with you.
Getty smiled at her. A further growth emerged from the side of her head.
You're not you. You're the fungus. You're in my brain.
The second group slowly morphed and the form of the sentinel's head appeared. It stayed attached to Getty's.
Well, we all had to change a little to survive. Even I worked that out in the end. Who's to say what's you, what's us, what's the fungus?
Hester stumbled to her feet.
That's the way life always worked. Until humans came along. Change.
Hester walked towards a nearby puddle, out into the middle of it, and stopped.
That's why I wouldn't take that helmet off if I were you.
She looked down as the puddle settled to see wavy reflections of her face in it. She touched the fungal growth over her eye.
It's not exactly separate from you anymore.
Hester looked up at the fungal people in the tree.
Oh, God. What's happened to me? What's happened to the city?
Try the world.
Hester turned to the tree that the Getty Sentinel had grown from and began to climb.
The world?
When she reached the top of the tree, she stopped and looked out over what was once London. The sprouted head of the Getty Sentinel joined her at the top of the tree.
It adapted. It survived. Perhaps it's not the world you wanted, but...
Hester surveyed the florid marshland that the city had become. In the distance, two lumbering fear quarters, the size of small buildings, stepped towards each other. They were greenish-yellow and covered in the hungry grass. They slowly squared up to one another in what looked to be fighting positions.
It's the world we have.
Hester stared at what she was sure to become a fight. Beside her, another fungal Getty head sprouted. They both looked out toward the quarters. Hester tried to marshal her senses to deal with the new information that was now hitting her in giant waves.
Okay, I need to rally survivors. We need to rebuild.
She reeled, trying to take in the situation.
Am I thinking this? Or is it the fungus?
She turned to the Getty head next to her.
Are there survivors?
You're thinking it. Does it really matter why you're thinking it? How many environmental factors affect our thought? Do you consider those mind control?
They looked out towards the hungry men as they came nearer to one another.
And of course there are survivors. You're looking at them.
One of the Gorter's bellies began to pucker inwards like a throbbing sore.
What are they doing?
What? You never watched the Discovery Channel, Director?
One of the Gorters reared back. They watched as the giant sore in the belly exploded, blasting pollen outwards over the other Gorter, who closed all of its eyes blissfully.
They're mating!
Hester considered this display of affection as the sentinel head moved next to her.
There's no going back now, is there? There's no world that was.
That's right.
Hester turned away from the Gorters, about to climb down from the tree.
So...
She leapt from the tree. The Whisper Suit was still able to bear the brunt of the leap. Hester stood up and looked around.
What are we going to do with this one?
Hester began to walk through the park.
And so a new protector descends from a mountain.
Hester reached the vine-encrusted park gates and pulled them open. She walked through and out onto a cracked and broken sidewalk, vegetation of various hues growing out of every crack and fissure of the walkway.
But no battle is due to begin.
Hester stopped for a moment and bent to pick something up in the waterlogged street.
There is only a burgeoning of seeds to be nurtured.
She looked down at the small circular object in her hand.
A sprout.
Inside the mask, Hester smiled.
A new world that will find new blueprints for life. This is the best that I could do.
In the Chamber of Pan, Kay sat on the throne. Her branch antlers have grown outwards in all directions, weighing her head down. An entire network of roots has grown straight out of her head and pierced the walls and roof of the chamber. Her body sat hunched forward in the throne, forever leaning down.
Is it good enough?
Kay slowly raised her head. It was difficult, but she managed to look up. Her eyes were no longer human, but had changed, and now resembled the goat-like eyes of Pan. Her mind bounced between past and present, future and memory.
I read a book written in the language in which trees write their rings. But who ever thought that trees knew everything? Faith, nostalgia, romanticism, these paths of least resistance we each follow. They're only comforts. None of them held the answer to saving us from ourselves.
Kay found herself looking at the Prime Minister's office in 10 Downing Street, the long dead and decayed PM leaning against the plinth upon which his love, the long dead Fern, still sat.
I wish I could have told you that it was all going to be okay. I wish I could have rounded off with some pithy message that would have warmed your heart and let you know that even though we destroyed this planet, this, that, or the other survives.
She now saw Dermot the Walker as he sat in the morning sun on top of one of the only untumbled tower blocks in London. He held his brother's homemade sign in his hands. His fingers absently traced the carved letters that spelled out Port Hill Farm.
Of course life survives. Of course hope does.
Hester picked her way across London. The two fungal heads of Getty and the Sentinel now sat on her shoulder.
Because life is struggle, and struggle requires hope. That doesn't make it easier.
Hester stopped walking when she heard the wings. She lifted her head to the sky and shielded her eyes. The sprouted heads of Getty and the Sentinel also looked skyward.
Perhaps we can do better next time, but to insist that we will, well, that seems like the path of least resistance, and that leads to the same.
Up in the morning sky, a flock of good folk flew past, their wings splendid and glorious.
But then again,
in the chamber of Pan, the being that was once Kay still sat on her throne, looking outward. Her red and yellow goat-like eyes all-seeing and sightless at the same time. Her antlers growing larger, branching out and digging into the chamber ceiling.
I am no longer human. I have new eyes now, born of both worlds. Perhaps I can create a new world from this throne. A better one than this one. Perhaps I've learned enough now. Perhaps I can...
Dear Incomprehension, it's thanks to you, I'll be myself in the end.
Deep Roots by Dan Waters and Val Rodriguez is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2019, Dan Waters and Val Rodriguez, all rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the author and Vault Comics. Copyright 2021, Graphic Audio, LLC, all rights reserved. Narrated by Eric Messner. With performances by Nazia Chowdhury as Kay Soni, Jenna Sharp as Abigail Hester, Scott McCormick as The Sentinel, Carolyn Kashner as Dr. Sarah Getty, John Keelty as Dermot the Walker, Jonathan Lee Taylor as Sprout, Lise Bruneau as Jenny Greenteeth, Marnie Penning as The Good Folk, and Raina Gabriel as Sal Davids. Also with Amanda Forstrom, Bradley Forster Smith, Chris Stinson, Chris Davenport, Elaine Yuko Qualter, Evan Casey, James J. Johnson, James Konacek, Joe Mallon, Katie Lee, Matthew Bassett, Matthew Pauly, Michael John Casey, Nora Ashrotti, Patrick Bussing, Richard Rowan, Steve Wannell, Taylor Cohen, Terence Aselford, Tia Shearer, and Yasmin Toison. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Eric Messner. Graphic audio dialogue editing and sound design by Robert McDonald and Michael Hanusiak. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producer, Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Deep Roots, you might also enjoy the series Dead World by Gary Reed, or the Great Insurrection series by David Beers and Michael Enderley. These titles and many more are available in graphic audio. Keep listening for a preview of another exciting title in graphic audio.
One edge of the galaxy, not yours. Outside the royal palace in Barsess, it's night and fires are burning throughout the city.
Let me speak to them. They'll listen to me. I'm the queen. So if I can just tell them to go home...
Do you see those people out there?
Yes, Mother.
They would kill you if they could. That's why we have to leave.
I know where your mother is. Deal is, I take you to get your mother, and I get Peggy back.
Peggy?
The Winnipeg. My ship.
My ship.
You stole it.
You shot me.
Remember, our mission is to find the Queen. The revolution depends on it, for the sake of the Areopan people and their republic. Queen Aldea must die.
The immortal Queen Aldea aboard my humble ship? Truly, my queen, in thou the very heart of Areopa dwelleth.
Oh my god, he's using thou.
Aldea, quiet.
Hold it right there!
Whatever it is you're gonna do, go do it. I got this.
Alita, I hope you're as badass as you think you are.
You want to undo my cuffs? $50 says he was going to kill you when he was done.
You're just trying to get me to switch sides.
Of course I am. You're pointing a gun at me and Lazaro wants to take over the galaxy or something.
Hey, that Beezer thing. Is it really some mystical, magical mind control thing?
Look, I've heard those stories my whole life, but how could anybody make such a thing?
And if somebody did?
How could they use it on other people? Who would do that?
15 years I've hunted you and you eluded me. And you know who paid the price? Me. Should I parade you for the crowds before killing you? After all, you belong to me now, like everyone else. So simple. So ironic.
Yeah! Simple!
From Magdalene Visaggio and Jason Smith, a cosmic graphic novel adventure of royalty, revolution, revenge, and really bad guys. Graphic Audio and Vault Comics present Vagrant Queen. Available at www.graphicaudio.net. Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,500 titles to choose from. Listen to over 150 binge-worthy series, from sci-fi to fantasy, to graphic novels, to mystery thrillers, to action-adventure, to westerns, and more. Check out our exclusive titles, available only in our dramatized adaptation format. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase a download series set at graphicaudio.net. You can also earn loyalty reward points, redeemable towards future online purchases. Stream audiobooks immediately or download them to listen offline on your mobile phone or tablet using our Graphic Audio Access app, which is available on all Android and Apple devices. We like being radically different when it comes to our audiobook productions. Listen to A Movie in Your Mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Visit our web store today at graphicaudio.net.